Yeah. I love Jim Gaffigan. If you want, the whole thing is funny. He goes on and on from there about getting a robe and who wears robes anymore. And, you know, now I've got to find some excuse, like some event to wear a robe to. I'm going to be doing an Advent series on giving and receiving. So for the next few weeks, all the way up through Christmas Eve, about giving and receiving. And man, it's fraught with peril. Giving gifts is like a virtual minefield. Right? I can tell you my own issue is when I am given a gift, and I don't care if it's Christmas morning or for my birthday, I know that my facial expression will never live up to the person's expectation, right? I think I'm expressive up front, but in my normal life, I'm a very sort of just kind of mean, relaxed face guy, you know? I'm just sort of like this. And so it'll be like, oh, this is great. And I try to get my voice to go up and my eyebrows to go up. But it always feels like I'm disappointed. Like, no matter how much I loved it, it seems like that. So then I start to get in my own head. Like, man, you sound like you're disappointed. So then I've got to go up to them later, like, I really loved it. It was really great. You know, you got to assure the person that it was wonderful. Or I never know what to give someone. So I'm always nervous about what to get somebody, how it's going to go. I spent a lot of time being really stressed out as a kid because I enjoy giving gifts, but in my mind, it's like it has to be great, right? I want it to be the right gift. And so I want to think about gifts in relationship to the ways in which we destroy them. Does that make sense? Like, we ruin gifts. We ruin giving them. We ruin receiving them. And we do it in some very consistent ways. That's my guess. So I think gifts can be ruined by the person who gives them. And they can be ruined by the person who gives them in all kinds of ways. I want to talk about two. One is the person giving the gift can do it thoughtlessly or out of obligation. So I don't know about you, but oftentimes I'll find myself or my family will find ourselves in a situation where we recognize we've got close friends and nuclear family, but then you also have extended family and friends that are a little bit, and then you start to realize, like, well, if I get Aunt Jenny a gift, then does that mean I've got to get all the cousins a gift too, because then they're going to know and be hurt, so I better get but if I get the cousins a gift, then there's got to be like a family dog that also needs a bone or something, and I got to get, and the circle just starts to spread and you start to feel really obligated. So gift giving is no longer fun. It's not a joy. I'm not doing it out of the goodness of my heart. I'm doing it because I feel like someone will be hurt if I don't. It's like obligatory giving. So I remember a Christmas with my wife, and she's got a large extended family. And on Christmas Eve, they all get together. And like all the cousins get each other a gift, and they get all the, you know, aunts and uncles gifts. And so over time, this gets really daunting. So like I want to make fudge. And now I've got to make it for 68 people. And how do I do that? I don't have an industrial-sized kitchen. So I remember receiving a gift at this particular Christmas Eve with her extended family from her aunt and uncle who were a part of Amway, like really high up in Amway. And they actually had a whole Amway warehouse in their basement, right? So they just had a bunch of stuff. And it was obvious to me that it was like, oh, like Joe's coming, because I'm like the boyfriend at this point. We better give him something. I'm not expecting anything, by the way. But then people will feel bad. So I ended up getting a book by Dan Quayle, the then vice president. The guy that can't spell potato, right? Apparently he wrote a book, though, and on marriage. It was like on marriage. And I'm not even married, but it was like advice on... I was so bad, but it was like, I felt bad, like, hey, it's cool, man. You know, don't go down into your warehouse and just grab something. It's okay, but there's a sense of obligation, right? Like, I have to do this. So then everyone's sort of awkward, like, do I have to read it now? Should I send them a letter telling them how much I love chapter 3? Like, I don't know what to do now, right? So, fraught with peril. So you can give it out of obligation and not out of the goodness of your heart. It's not a gift anymore, it's something else. Another way the giver can ruin the gift is when there's strings attached. You all know people in your life. You might be one of them. I think I'm like this sometimes. I give gifts, but it's not really a gift because now I've got a set of expectations on you about how you'll receive it and use it or what your response might be. So these subtle ways, and it's almost controlling. It's like a gift from a place of power. I can give to you. I can do this for you. So one of my favorites, I have a story from a friend of mine. I actually asked him to send it to me, and he sent me an email. He's part of we have an online congregation. I don't know if you're aware of this. So we podcast the sermons, If you ever miss, you can listen to all the sermons on podcast, or you can share it with a friend if it's too intimidating to come to church. They can always hear, like, is this person crazy? It's actually on the back of your bulletin, the podcast address. So we have people that listen, and then some of them know me, and they'll email me or they'll contact me. So this is my good friend Mark and his wife Melissa. So he tells the story of receiving this gift from his in-laws. So I'll read it. He says, my first Christmas as a married man was spent in Lee, a tiny town in Berkshire County, the westmost part of Massachusetts. So they're in this small town on the East Coast. At the time, Melissa, my wife's parents, lived in Seattle, and my own folks lived in Nampa. As relatively broke newlyweds, we could not afford the hefty holiday airfare required for Christmas in the Northwest. And as renters of a tiny 700 square foot apartment, we could not host. We had no choice but to spend our first Christmas as a married couple alone, without any visiting family members. In other words, it was the most peaceful, comfortable, quiet, joy-filled Christmas we've ever experienced. This Christmas was memorable for a variety of reasons. One reason it was memorable was because I received perhaps the most surprising gift I've ever gotten to date. It was from my in-laws, who sent me an acoustic guitar. Objectively speaking, it was a lovely gesture, even more impressive given that it must have what it must have cost to ship it all the way to New England. But there was one problem. I'd never played the guitar before, nor had I asked for a guitar. It should be noted that my wife comes from an exceptionally and exceedingly musical family. Every member of the family plays at least one instrument. Most of them play two. Every member grew up singing solos in worship teams and church musicals. My wife's family has taken family portraits with instruments in hand. They even harmonize when singing Happy Birthday. They're a remarkably talented bunch. I can only surmise that the guitar represented my in-laws' hope that as the newest member of the family, I too would join the musical ranks. Unfortunately for them, once I mastered Yankee Doodle Dandy, I decided that I'd accomplished everything I set out to accomplish as a guitarist. The guitar sat in storage for years until I gave it to some church friends whose daughter aspired to become the next Taylor Swift. Unfortunately for my in-laws, I did not become the musician they had hoped I'd become, and not surprisingly, music has not been an integral part of our family ethos as it is for theirs. However, as the guitar is something we still laugh about 15 years later, I can say that it wound up being a pretty great gift after all. It's very generous and it's a kind gift, but what comes with it is a kind of expectation that you'll be musical like us, or maybe just a hope. I don't think that's evil, but you can imagine as the receiver, so now should I get lessons? Like, what's the expectation level? You spent all this money and purchased me this grand gift and I don't know how to play it. Is it a gift when the person receiving it now feels a sense of indebtedness or obligation? Gift giving's treacherous, right? So there's lots of ways that you can be a giver and hurt the gift, but there's lots of ways you can be a receiver and sort of ruin the gift, right? So you can receive gifts and immediately feel like I'm indebted. The person receiving, oh, you shouldn't have done this. You shouldn't have done this. And you can almost watch them melt. You can watch them look around like, should I write a check for you for this? Right? It's like, no, this is Thanksgiving dinner. You don't have to pay me for it, right? Like, I'm doing something nice for you. But for many of us, receiving a gift is hard for us. We feel like there's something we should do, some way to reciprocate. And the larger the gift, the more we feel indebted. So instead of being able to receive it with joy, we can crush it with our feeling as though we've got to do something to respond. I mean, we went raking leaves around the neighborhood, and you'd be shocked at the people who won't let us help. They would not let us rake their leaves. So in the first house we went to, there was a man, you know, he's retirement age, there's leaves everywhere, he's in the middle of trying to get up onto his roof to do something, I don't know what. And so it's like, hey, you're doing that, we can be out of your hair in 20 minutes. No. And there was a real sense that he did not want us there. I think in part because to watch us rake up would make him feel not capable. It's a reminder of age. It's a reminder of death. It's a reminder of what I can't do. So instead of being able to receive it as for what it was, there was a difficulty. I know when people do these things for me, my instinct is like, kids want to rake my leaves? Well, I want to pay. right? I don't want to feel indebted. So we can ruin gifts by how we receive them. We can ruin gifts when we're ungrateful, right? When someone gives us something and it's like, that's not the color I wanted. I can be like this. I have a great story of my sweet son who's amazing in so many ways and actually is a wonderful gift giver. But I remember his grandmother sent him a gift for nothing, just a present to he and his sister because she loves them. And he opened it and I think it was like, I don't know, I think it might have been pajamas or something, but he wanted a toy. So his first response was something like, oh, I thought it was a toy. And it's like the rage in my face and me, like I want to just burn the thing in front of him. Like I want to take all of his toys and throw them into a dumpster, right? Like, where's your gratitude? She said it to you for no reason, you know, just to say she loves you.
He was only two.
He was. I think that's probably true. My reaction was over the top. But the idea is we ruin gifts in so many ways. It's so difficult. I get anxiety when we start to circle up on Christmas morning and we start passing things out. Like, oh my gosh, I want to make sure I show the appropriate amount of gratitude. I want to make sure that I hope my gift is close to as thoughtful as, you know. I don't want to have any of this imbalance. We do it with gifts, but we do it with significant things too. We do it in relationship. We do tit for tat. Right, we have a hard time, it's so ingrained in us, we have a hard time believing that someone can love us with no strings attached. That love could actually be a gift that's free. That all we have to do is say yes or no to it, receive it or reject it. We have a hard time receiving help when people just want to help, do something nice because it makes us feel incredibly indebted. We want to serve, but we don't want to be served. We have a hard time believing that God could love us without there being strings attached. Like, God will love me if... God will love me unless. It's so a part of our culture that what I'm going to argue is that we operate according to the logic of exchange, the logic of economy, the logic of tally marks. It's so much a part of us. It's so much a part of the workforce. It's so much a part of our relationships that we can't get out of it. But I think that God's economy is different. God's economy is the economy of grace. God's economy is the economy of gift, where it's gratuitous. It's surplus, it's free, it flows over. And all we have to do is say, do we want love? Do we want hope? Do we? Then we just have to say yes to it. We just have to open our heart. And that's hard, it's easy to say, it's hard to do. But can we transition from the logic of exchange and economy to a logic of grace and gift? Can we live that way in our relationships, in our marriages, in our friendships, with our children? Where it's gift. Like, I think of the other person as a gift every day, right? Their presence in my life is a gift. Do I receive it or do I reject it? I'm a gift to them. Can I be that for them with no strings attached? Part of the logic of economy, part of how I know it's so much a part of me is how much I hate the story of the vineyard owner. I dislike this parable so much. So you're telling me you're going to hire people at the morning, 9, noon, 4, they're all going to get paid the same? That's like an affront. It's like an assault on my values as an American. The more you work, the more you get paid. That's the way it goes. You don't get to get paid the same for less work. So you read it, and immediately, if that happened to me, I would be really upset. If I got hired first, I'd be upset. And Jesus' response is so great. But can't I give as I see fit? This is my, again, it's representative, right? This is my love, this is my grace, this is my forgiveness, and I want to pour it out gratuitously onto all of you. It's not about who deserves what. It's deserve. Who deserves it? Oh, that's so much. Even when we went and raked leaves. So we went around, and there were like some able-bodied people who came to the door, and they let us rake their yards, and there was some who felt really uncomfortable, like, why are we raking people who can do it themselves? They don't deserve it. But we're not here to figure out who deserves, who can, who can't. We just want to be a gift. We're just trying to go around and spread some joy in the neighborhood, right? But it's so hard for me to get outside of that mindset of who deserves it. I'll give if you deserve it. Or I'd love to give to the worthy poor, or whatever that means, right? If you work for it, if you've earned it. But that's all the logic of exchange and economy. It's not about the logic of grace and gift, which should be free. God gives to each of them as God sees fit, freely, graciously, gratuitously. It's divine economy. It's not the one we live under. But it so seeps into our relationships that we talk about, like, I'm going to invest in the youth of the church. I'm going to invest. To what? Hope to get a payout later? I invest with the expectation that that investment will grow and they'll become certain kinds of people? So then it's not a gift. It's an investment with an expected payout. 3% return? I mean, what's reasonable? I don't know. 5% growth in these teens? Our language is one of economy. Our thoughts are one of economy. Our values are one of economy. But what would it be like if we shifted that to grace? Because in John chapter 3, God so loved the world that God gave. You can skip the... Yeah, no, that's right, go back. God so loved the world that he gave his best. That whoever believes won't perish but will have eternal life. God did not send his son into the world to judge the world, but that the world might be saved. Gift, free. And then the question is, will we receive the gift or will we reject? Will we receive the gift and live in the light? Or will we reject the gift and live in the darkness? And a lot of times the next line gets read like God is going to judge us if we don't believe the right things, right? But I don't see it that way. I see it as a gift has entered your world. Will you receive it? Receiving it means being in the light. Receiving it means receiving love. Receiving it means receiving hope and joy and peace. To receive it means that I will be different. It's not about do I believe all the right things? If not, I spend eternity in hell. That's not the passage is about God giving a gift that many will reject and continue to be in darkness. Because that's what it is when we reject love. That's what it is when we reject hope. That's what it is when we reject peace. We live in darkness. Not because God sends us into darkness, but because by rejecting the gift, we move into darkness. Right? Next slide. The light came into the world and people love darkness more. I want you to read it like God's heart is breaking. Read that like God's heart is breaking. But people love the darkness more. Right? All who do wicked things hate the light and don't want to come into the light for fear, because they're afraid, right? They don't want to be exposed. They don't want people to see. So they run. The next slide. I love the way this is phrased. Oh, sorry, go back one. The bottom line, whoever does the truth, another translation is whoever lives in the truth, comes to the light so that it can be seen that their actions were done in God, through God. Truth not as a set of beliefs, but a way of living. Those who live the truth, right? Whoever does the truth. Because the truth is a way of being in the world. It's a way of being able to receive the gifts that God so graciously gives. And to receive those things is to live in love, in God, in the light. So the question I'm going to pose for the next few weeks are going to be things like, what would it mean to receive ourselves as a gift? Instead of being so angry with ourselves, wanting to be different, maybe even hating ourselves, what would it be like to receive ourselves as a gift from God? How different would that be? What would it be like to give ourselves away as a gift to other people, to the world? The logic of grace, not the logic of tit for tat. What would it be like to receive other human beings as gifts in this church and in our homes and in our lives? As real gifts, given, right? What would it be like to receive God as a gift? So we're going to be thinking about the logic of grace, where it's free. And in small ways in your own life, in your own heart, what would it be like to say yes to God's love as though it were unconditional, as though God were not here to judge everything you did and thought or didn't do or didn't think, but that God was pouring out love and all you had to do was say yes, like a gift, like all I have to do is just receive it in my heart. How would that change our life? What would that look like in our relationships? That my son is not someone to control, that my son each day is a gift that I receive from God, that I say yes to. All that he is, just as he is. What if I did that with my daughter? What if I did that with my wife? If I did that, then I wonder if I might be able to say, then I'm going to do this as a gift to others with no strings. What if I poured myself out in love such that I might be a gift to people where I don't have these expectations and burdens, where it's not the logic of exchange. Who deserves it? Who deserves my time? Where should I invest it? Who owes? Who doesn't owe? Who gives? Who doesn't give? What if we swept that away and thought of it in terms of free? Because every single thing that matters, the most important things in your life, cannot be bought. We say yes to them, or we say no. We accept them, or we reject them. Let's pray. Lord, we're so grateful that we get to learn from the great gift giver, that you looked out over the vastness, the emptiness, the void, and you created, and that creation itself, all of it is a gift for us to enjoy and to love, that each of the people in our lives have been given. Can we see them as gifts? Can we see ourselves as a gift, Lord? Help us. Give us eyes to see. To say yes to hope and love and joy. To not run. We love you, Lord. Amen. If you would please stand for our closing song.